noticed, maybe you didn't notice, for a number of months, there was a woman who sat near the post. She came with a caretaker, and I think she had some kind of an infusion. Yeah? Her name was Tsippy Kovach. She was coming here from a hospice on Haratzofim. And she passed away this morning. After this share, going to the Levaya. She was a member of my shul in Arno for the longest time, 15 years. She was an exceptional, outstanding woman. She used to come here, though it was difficult for her. She loved learning. When I was rabbi in Harnov, I think she came from on the first day she moved in, they moved from Haifa. She came 15 years old, she missed the Shia. We have another significant relationship between me and her husband. I don't think she ever missed a demonstration against Oslo. She was on the front lines. She had a burning, tremendous Ahavat Eretz Yisrael. Tremendous Ahavat Eretz Yisrael. The fact is, I don't know at this moment, but I want to say all the details, but I'll just tell you one thing. She took sick some 15 years ago. The doctors gave her 6 months. And there was a particular question that she had, and she came to ask me. When I was presented with this question, I knew immediately it was a question to have a certain operation or not. Now, that was not my lead. So I told her, go with your husband, go see her, Barakai Eliyahu. Doctors had told her that if she has the operation, it will extend her life somewhat, but it would diminish the quality of life. Of course, I knew the moment that she asked me this question after a sheer one night in Shul, this is not for me. Sent it to her mother, Leon. She came back the next day, and she tells me that Rabot Chayliyahu said, under no circumstances have that operation. She got another 15 years, saw five of her children married. I don't know how many Einikos were born in the last 15 years. Every few months, another Einikos was born. This should be a schus for a Mordechai Sema ben Mazal, the Fuhr Shlemer, he is a great man. Mordechai is a great man. It takes a certain amount of sanctity and holiness to be able to tell a woman whose life is hanging in the balance, don't you dare have that operation. At least I feel good that I sent her, I referred her to the right person. She was Zeta. Was she was Zeta in the last 15 years? A lifetime. Lifetimes full of I just was called this morning, and I don't know, we had such a relationship, and here she was coming. With her last kaychas, she came here for a number of months, and then she spent the time having a cup of coffee, talking with my wife. But we knew that she was, but whenever it happens, it's always like a shock. She was a very, very intelligent woman, very talented in a lot of areas. That's also, I'm dedicating this year to Tzipi Kovach Al Hashem. That's it.
Parshas Truma.
We're going to be dealing with one question, that one very serious question. One very serious question with regard to Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh, Ki Tisa, Vayakhel, Pikudeh. All of those five Parshas in a row. Are they in order, or are they not in order? You don't have to understand the meaning of the question yet. We'll take a look at the first Medrash. Medrash Tanchuma. V'osu mi'migdash v'shachanti v'tocham. The beginning of the parasha, it says, you shall make unto me a holy place, and I will dwell in their midst. Eimatai nevra l'moshe ha'parasha hazu shel mishkan. When was this parasha of Mishkan, the parasha that tells the Jewish people to build a sanctity, a home, a sanctuary to God, when was it said? What date? Medrash answers, B'yom HaKippurim Atzmo, on Yom Kippur itself. Now, we'll be going through the chronology over here. Parashas Truma comes after Mishpatim. Mishpatim is right after Torah was given at Sinai. We're in the month of Sivan. We're about the seventh day of Sivan. Sivan. They have come out of Mitzrayim in Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. After Sivan is going to come Tammuz, alright, Tammuz. Moshe Rabbeinu has gone up on this seventh day, eighth day of Sivan. Moshe Rabbeinu has gone up to the mountain in order to bring down the actual tablets. They had heard Anochi Hashem Elokecha. They had heard the Aseret HaDibot, the Ten Commandments. And now he went up to the mountain to get it. At the end of the 40 days, it's the 17th day of Tammuz, he gets the terrible, terrible news. God tells him, Lechrei, go down, Kishitei Samcha, because your people have acted with corruption. They've made themselves a deity. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down and he sees what has happened at the bottom of the mountain. They've made an egel. He shatters the luchot. He calls upon the tribe of Levi to punish the evildoers. Next day he says, I'm going to go up to the mountain and beg for forgiveness. He's up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. He's up on the mountain and he prays. And Rosh Chodesh El God tells him, make a new set of luchot, and I will write on the luchot that which I wrote on the first one. He spends another 40 days on the mountain. He comes down on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, he brings the luchot down. The first actual Torah that the Jewish people got. What a luchot. And that was the day on which God told him, Solachti kidvorecha, I have forgiven them the sin of the ego. I've forgiven them the sin of the ego. Okay? So now the Medrash says that this parasha was said to them, Truma was said to them on Yom Kippur. Now wait a minute. We're going to have Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh. Ki Tisa is going to be the story of the Egel. Well, wait, that means these Parshas are not following in chronological order at all. You know, according to the Medrash that says that the Yom Kippur, Atzmo, he told them the mitzvah of Mishkan, then it should have been, after Mishpatim, it should have been Ki Tisa, Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakhel, Pekudeh. Yes?
You already have this part of the intro, because it's when you look at that when Moshe stood to judge the people and actually said that it's Yom Kippur, that he came down after Yom Kippur.
You're talking about the end of Parshas Mishpatim?
No, I'm talking about the beginning of Parshat Yitro, Yisro. When Moshe sitting to judge the people.
When is he? Yes, he says. When is Moshe judging the people? And there we have a machloket also. Was it after? Did Yitro come before Matan Torah or after Matan Torah? All right, but we're going to get ourselves so confused with the order of the parsha, you understand? So let's just take it, you know, let's bite off as much as we can chew. Yes, there is a great deal of discussion. When did Yitro come? There are those who hold that Yitro came after Torah was given. But wait a minute, in Parashat Yitro, right after it says that Yitro went home, then the Aseret HaDibrot said, okay, if we're going to take off too much, we ain't going to make it. We ain't going to make it. So therefore, we're talking about the order of Truma Tetzavik Tisa Vayaka Pekudei, according to the Medrash that says that the mitzvah of building the sanctuary was given on Yom Kippur itself. Achal Pisa, the Medrash goes on to say, Achal Pisa Parshat HaMishkan, Kodemet L'masah HaEgel, even though the Parsha Truma and Tetzavik, which is the Parsha of the Mishkan, it precedes Masah HaEgel. But that's the way it was. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shalom, Rabbi Shalom, Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Shalom said, I always like him. Because my name is Shalom Ben Yehuda. My father's name is Yehuda. So he's the opposite way around. Ein mugdam umu'ocha. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Shalom. Shalom ein mugdam umu'ocha b'Torah. The Torah doesn't necessarily follow chronological order, and the former and the latter don't necessarily follow chronological order. Shenema, no umagotel lo teda. Pasuk in Mishlei that says the paths of Torah move, and you don't really know where one belongs, but of course there has to be a reason. We'll worry about that later. Mitul tolo ten shilehu shel Torah. The pathways of Torah move, uparshioteha, and the parshat of Torah. Have a? Therefore, as a result of this, we say, B'yom ha-kippurim, Nema l'Moshe, on Yom Kippur, Moshe was told for us in Midash, Minayin, how do we know this? And now we're going to get the order. Shekein, Ola Moshe b'shisha b'sivan. Moshe went up to the top of the mountain on the sixth of Sivan. The Osar Boim Yerim Vah Boim Lila, he was there for 40 days and 40 nights. And then Od also, he also spent up there Arboim, the Od also Arboim, he did another 40 and another 40. Hadei Meyav Esim, 120 days. Ma'atun Motze, and then therefore you will find, Shem Yom HaKippurim Nid Kaper Lehem, that they were forgiven on Yom Kippur, Ubo V'yom Hamo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it was on that day when he forgave them, God said, and make unto me a sanctuary, and I will dwell in the midst. Kadesha Yedu Kol Homot. Listen, this is very important. Kadesha Yedu Kol Homot, in order that all the nations of the world should know, that God forgave them for the act of the Egel. That even after the act of the Egel, he says, I want to dwell in your midst, and I want you to build that sanctuary for me. That's why the Mishkan is called the Mishkan of Testimony. Because it bears most eloquent testimony for the whole world to know that God had forgiven them the sin of the golden calf and he wants to dwell in their midst. It's called Mishkan Ha'edut, Shehu Eidut L'chol Ba'ei Ha'olam. It is testimony for all those who come to this world, Shakodish Baruch Hu, Shochein b'migdashchem, that the Holy One, blessed be He, dwells in your sanctity. Amar HaKodesh Baruch Hu. HaKodesh Baruch Hu said, Yovel Zahav, Shevi Mishkan, let the gold of the Mishkan come and forgive, be atonement for the gold of the Kev. Yechaper on Zoh, Shenasa Boho Egel, the gold with which they made the calf. Shekosubo, because by the golden calf, in Parsha Kitisa it says, by its porku kolon, it is Meazov, people took off their golden nose rings and all sorts of other gold. So now the goal of the Mishkan is forgiveness for the goal of the Egel, or the Kasim is scattered and dissolved, therefore they are forgiven and atoned for through gold. So Tatuma, that's why it says at the beginning of the Sefer, this is the Truma Shet Tikumi Yitam that you should take from them, Zohar, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ki E'ele Arucha Loch Umi Mako Tagich Epa Eich. Pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says, E'ele Arucha Loch, I am going to bring healing to you, Umi Mako Tagich, and from your blows or your illness, Epa Eich, I'm the one who's going to make sure that you're going to be healed. You know what the bottom line of this medrash is? And it may be a bit disturbing. The bottom line of the medrash is, it would seem, if there wouldn't have been the sin of the Egel, there would have been no need for a Mishkan. The Mishkan is only a response, a reaction to, a source of forgiveness, atonement, healing. But if they wouldn't have made the ego, no Mishkan. A little difficult to grasp. You know what that means? That means that Truma Tzava Kitiso Vayakel Pakunde Vayikro Tzav Shmini Tazvia Mitzvah. I'm getting scared. I may miss one of them. You know, all these parashos in Torah that talk about sacrifice and sacrifice and Nachamol sacrifice and Nachamol sacrifice, it all seems to be only because they sinned with the Egel. You know, I'm afraid to say it. Maybe it's good that they sinned with the Egel. What does the message mean? Is that the significance of God dwelling in our midst? And if not for the Egel, he wouldn't want to dwell in our midst. A little difficult to understand. There's another medrash that follows the same line. That's number two. V'yikuli truma. But this is a more poetic medrash. A very, very poetic medrash. V'yikuli truma that shall take unto me donations. Hadot d'chsiv. This is what's meant when it says in Shir HaShirim, God says, Ani yishena, v'libi er. Or Klangeslo says, I'm sleeping, but my heart is awake. What does that mean? Omra, Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people said, Ani Oshanti Li Min HaKeitz. I already had fallen asleep. I had given up hope that there will be an end to our suffering. Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu Er, but God always remains awake. Shenena, as it says, Tzur Levavi V'chelki Elokim Lo'olam. My mighty one and my heart and my portion is God forever. Ani Shenom and our mitzvot, I have fallen asleep from fulfilling mitzvot. Avozukut avotai omedetli, but I still have the merit of my fathers. But libi er, my heart is awake. Ani Shenom in Masahegel, I have fallen asleep, or I had fallen into a sense of despair as a result of the sin of the Egel, but libi er, my heart was awake. Vakodesh Baruch Hu martik alai. But the revelation, the word seems to mean is close to me, despite the fact that I sinned, despite the fact that I made the Egel. I fell asleep on the job. We sin, but libi er. HaKadosh Baruch Hu martik alai hevei. This is what it means. V'yikuli truma. God says, build to me a mishkan. Piski liachoti dayati. Open up for me, my sister, my beloved. Admosai eheyem italeh below bayit. God says to them, after the sin of the Egel, how long am I going to go without a house? Sharoshi nimlotal, my head is full of dew from being outdoors. Ella Asuli Mugdash Shalo Ehyebechutz. Make for me a holy place so that I will have somewhere to reside and I won't be outdoors. The Medrash, in its poetic form, is telling us God wants to dwell in our midst. But the dwelling in our midst seems clearly to be a reaction, a result the response to Chet HaEgel. So the two Midrashim really agree. And that means, of course, according to the both Midrashim, the order of the parshios does not follow the chronology. It should have been Kitisa, Tuma, Tetzava, V'yakev. One more, Rashi. Rashi as well says that. Vayitin or Moshe, there's number three. Ein muvdam ruach haTorah. Earlier and later events are not presented in chronological sequence in the Torah. Maso Hegel, Kodem Litzivu Imalecha Tanishdom, Yomim Rabim Hoyu. The sin of the golden calf preceded the commandment to make a Mishkan by many, many days. Shade, he gives a very, very concise description of the chronology. Shade, the Shiva also the Tammuz, on the 17th of Tammuz, Nishkaru Aluchot, the tablets were broken. Ubiyom HaKippurim, and on the Yom HaKippurim, after that, Nitratzach of the Baruch of Yisrael, and Yom Kippur, the Holy One, blessed be He, was placated toward Israel. Ulamachrot Hitkhimu Benitvat HaMishkan, and the day after Yom Kippur, they began gathering the contributions for the Mishkan, for Hukam, and then it was erected and put up on Echad Ben Nisan, half a year later, first day of Israel. So we have now three, a Medrash Tanchuma, a Medrash Rabba, Rashi, the parshas are out of order. Okay? The sin of the Egel preceded the command to make the Mishkan, which therefore leaves the impression, very clearly, that the Mishkan is the antidote to, it is it's the medicine that we had to take, which leaves, of course, the Mishkan in a position as though, in and of itself, really we could do without it. But when we sin, we no longer could do without it. Okay? Right? Even though that second Medrash, seems to bring in another thought, the idea God doesn't want to be outside. God not wanting to be outside. Like, how long am I going to go and wander? The wandering God who wants to find his place and wants to find his place amongst the Jewish people. Though the Medrash clearly says that all of this happened after the sin of the golden calf, but it does introduce a certain positive element into the construction of the Mishkan, the mitzvah of the Mishkan. I need a house. And I want my house to be built by you, and that I should be in your midst. Now the question is, all right, we're dealing now with this first opinion, that the parshios are not in order. Now, this is never something random. You should never have the feeling that, well, Torah doesn't follow in chronological sequence, Former and latter, just, you know what? What do you know? It's not haphazard. It's not random. If ever it's out of order, there has to be a very good reason for it. Otherwise, what are you going to tell me? Torah doesn't follow chronological order? It starts with the death of Moshe and takes us to year 39 in the Midbar? 39? 38? 37? I won't go much further. Torah does begin with creation of the earth. Creation of the whole world. 10 generations from Adam until Noah. 10 generations from Noah to Avram. We don't start with Yitzhak and go to Yaakov and then, Avram. Torah follows chronological order from the word Bereshis until the end of the Devarim le'enei kol Yisrael. But here and there are parshiyot that are plucked out of the sequence. And what we have to understand is, when this unusual thing is done, why is it done? So the one who tries to answer that is Rabbeinu B'chaya, number four. Umivnei ma'ed, stavet Moshe, bekam, tumas ha'mishkan, Why here, if the Parshas Mishpatim, why here is Moshe commanded that they should bring donations to the Mishkan? When the mitzvah really wasn't told to the Jewish people until after Yom Kippur. He's following the order of the Medrashim. What? He's asking the question. Why take it out of order? Why can't you just leave chronology alone? And start with Kitiso, then go to Truma, to Tzavah. The sin of the Egel preceded the command to make the Mishnah. Shaharei ha'olam ha'yev Tamas, before you even know this chronology, backwards and forth, the sin was in Tamuz. And Maisa ha'mishkan, building the Mishkan, started after Yom Kippur, besomach, the next Yom Kippur, right after it. Mikomakom ha'toga sikeil diroch. The Torah that all of its ways are the ways of pleasantness, and all of her pathways are shalom, peace. The Torah chose to tell us the command of the Mishkan, which is the kapara, which is God. The Maisa Mishkan that's going to be the kapara, the atonement for the sin that has not yet been committed. Torah chose to write it out of order. Shehua kapara, kodem shiyazkir avanahu. The Torah chose to write the kapara before they're going to mention the sin. She came, midoso shalakomish garbo. This is the way God does things in his world. Shemagdim refua lamakra. See right away. God brings the refuah. The refuah is already waiting in place before the tragedy befalls. As our rabbis learned, HaKadosh Baruch Hu borei refuah liYisrael tchila, v'achar kach makeh otam. God first creates the refuah, the healing, and then he strikes them. Shenema kirofi liYisrael v'nigla avon Ephraim, as I was preparing to heal Yisrael, only then did the sin of Ephraim become revealed. So of course, where do we know this from? That's a very important rule, by the way. If we take a little closer look at history, we'll see that at many moments in history, sort of the refuah was ready. We didn't know about it until after the Makkah, but where do we learn from it? Listen, how could I not give you the source for this? It's the month of Adar. Take a look at number 5. It's a Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara in Megillah says, Achar Hadvarim Ho'eila, after these things. Beginning of the 3rd chapter of the Megillah. After these things, Gidal HaMelech HaShereish, as Halam Ben Hamdoso HaAgogi Tzorer Yudim. I'm reading the Pasuk, you know. Everybody remembers Pesukim from the Megillah by heart, you know. Beginning of the 3rd chapter is the meteoric rise to power of Haman. Achar advarim ha'ele gita ha'melech ha'chashresh es Haman ben ha'ndasa ha'agrabu v'yinas ehu me'al kol ha'sarim, you understand? V'chol avdei ha'melech ha'she v'shahar ha'melech karim u'mishtach ha'vim le'Haman. All of the servants of the king who are in the palace courtyard are bending and bowing and scraping before Haman. Because this is what the king had commanded. So the Gemara wants to know, Acharma, the beginning of the 3rd chapter in the Megillah is after these things. After what? After what? So the Gemara answers, Omar Rava. Rava said, Achar Shevora HaKadosh Baruch Hu Refuah LeMakkah. Rava said, only after the Holy One Blessed is he created a remedy for the affliction, did he send the affliction. Because Reish Lakish said, "Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makeh Yisrael, God never strikes Israel, Elohim King Borei Lehem before Tchila, unless he has created a remedy for them beforehand." Shenema Kirofil Yisrael, that's what the Rabbeinu Bechaya brought. That's what he brought. That was it. As I was healing Israel, then the sin of Ephraim will be revealed. Avo Umos HaOlam, Ein HaKeh. But God with regard to how he deals with the nations of the world, it doesn't work that way. First he strikes them, and only then does he begin to think of rehabilitating them. Umar Solomon came, but in the case of the other nations of the world, it is not so. Makosan, he strikes them, the achakach bode lehem refua, and afterwards he creates a remedy. Shenema, as it says, v'nigaf hashemet mitzrayim nodof v'rofo. This was talking about the days of Yecheskel. God will strike Egypt, nodof strike, and only after strike comes rofo, comes the healing. There have been periods in Jewish history I don't want you to think as though, you know, we know exactly how to figure these things out. But there's no question about it. Tragedy, we didn't have Eretz Yisrael 10 years earlier. But when we did have it, it was there waiting to take in Jews who had to flee. And if it wasn't there before, it was because of the evil of the nations of the world. A question of honor. The absolute brutality and cruelty of the nations of the world. We're not going to have to go through Roosevelt and the St. Louis, you understand? Sent that boat back to Hamburg, they were all killed. There was no place in America in 1939, I think, 38, there was no place in America for a boatload of Jews. Nobody let them land. They started off in Havana, and then they went through the Caribbean until they were off the coast of Florida. They were able to see the lights of the hotels in Florida. Sent all the way back. No jewels set foot here. But then after the war, when almost probably the nations of the world had already been punished for that, it was here and it was ready when we needed it. But it's also true as the Babylonian Jewish community was beginning to crumble. Jews lived in Babel for 1,500 years. And then it began to crumble, and there were already Jewish communities beginning to sprout in Spain, Morocco, Italy, France, Germany, Poland. All sorts of communities were there, ready to absorb the Jews of Babylon. And it has happened in a lot of other instances. I know sometimes, right, for sure. When you think of the incidents in your own lives, you'll find that, first you go through a tragedy and everything goes wrong, and then all of a sudden, some years later, everything was going well. You forgot already the tzara of a few years back. And then you start to rethink it and say, hey, it was not bad. I mean, there are times that you have to make a testimonial dinner for some rotten guy who fired you from a fashlugin job. At the time he fires you understand, it's the worst, next to the fatal illness or loss of a spouse, loss of employment is number three. From 1 to 10 of the worst things that shake up people. And here this guy, here it is, drags up the room. I don't have any panos at it. Then you don't notice. He gets you moving. You get going. You know, 20 years later, you're a multi-millionaire. And you hire that guy to sweep the floors in your factory, you know. He did you the biggest favor. We never know. We don't know what's going to happen from today to tomorrow. The revenge learned by Klangsfeld, the refuah is always ready and in place. That's what happens in the Megillah. Achar HaDvarim HaEla. What was the end of the second chapter in the Megillah? Number one, we have Esther in place. Esther is the queen. There's a plot to assassinate Ahasuerus. Bits of a Seder. Who is it that reveals this plot?
Mordechai.
And in the book of the diary or the chronot, whatever it is, they write there that Mordechai HaYehudi was the one who revealed the plot. Look at past history. Shah doesn't have any significance to anybody in the world. But it means that all of the ingredients that are necessary to bring about the salvation of the Jewish people are all ready. Now Haman can rise to power. Now he can begin his campaign against the Jewish people. Now he can attempt to destroy them, men, women, and children, one day. Because we can, the nation can rest assured, he has made sure that everything is necessary. That's the refuah before the Maggid. Same thing here, Rabbi Abachai is saying, and that explains the Rashi and the two Midrashim we learn, that the sin of the Egel historically preceded Mishkan, yet Mishkan is written in the Torah before the sin of the Egel, in order to tell us the atonement for the Jewish people has already been prepared.
Rabbi, what is the
chet
of Ephraim that is referred to?
Oh, this pasuk is a pasuk in Hosea. Oh. The pasuk in Hosea was the Navi who prophesied to the 10 tribes. The period of the 10 tribes, remember they were the first ones that went into exile. There were kings of Israel that were very wicked. And he is giving Musa to Ephraim to do tshuva, because if you don't, terrible things are going to happen. Ultimately, the terrible things did happen. So he says that even this God who's bringing in punishment, but the refuah is ready. All you have to do is do tshuva, and the refuah is there waiting for you. It's not talking to, and there, that's also Ephraim. Is another name for the 10 tribes. The 10 tribes were called Ephraim because the city of Shomron was in Ephraim. Ephraim was the largest tribe of the 10 tribes. So Ephraim is just like the rest of Klal Yisrael is called Yehuda. They're called Ephraim. And it was not long after Hosea that the 10 tribes were sent into exile. Right, now we got to move with alacrity. The Ramban has a completely different approach, a completely opposite approach. And I chose the Ramban because the Ramban says it's clearly, very clear, but there's no question about it, that there are other Midrashim and other Mepharshim. But the Ramban says it very clearly, and I even found in my house for a second time, found it a few months ago, the English translation of the Ramban. I'm going to read, I don't know, I have to read the Hebrew, I can't read English. But I know how to read English. And this is a Ramban at the beginning of Parsha Vayakhel. Vayakhel Moshe kol adat b'nei Yisrael. Yichlol kol adat b'nei Yisrael ha'anoshim v'ha'anoshim. When he says that Moshe gathered the entire community, it means men and women. Because both men and women were actively involved in donating and making and creating for the Mishkan. Ki kulam hitnagvu, all of them donated b'melechet ha-Mishkan, for the work of the Mishkan. V'hinei Moshe, acha she'tzivo la'aron v'ha'nesiyim v'chol b'nei Yisrael ho'anoshim kol asher dibei Hashem ito b'har Sinai achrei shivor ha-luchos. Moshe, after he commanded Aaron and the Nesiyim and all the children of Israel who were there with him at Mount Sinai, after he had broken the Luchot, the Natan al-Panav Masvet says that after he broke the Luchot, he came down from the mountain, there was a brilliance, a shine that came from the space. He had to put a mask upon his face. Chazar v'tzivon, v'hikilu elav etahat ha'idah anashim v'nashim v'tav. And he says, after that, they brought all of the people together, and he's going to speak to them again. V'yitachem shehoyosev v'yom maharat v'nigetav. V'omar l'kulam, inyan ha'mishkan, asher yitztababu mitchilo kodem shevor haluchot. It may very well be that when he gathered them together to speak to them about the Mishkan, he is telling them that which he was commanded before he broke the Luchos. But he had not been down from the mountain yet. He had already received the command of to build the Mishkan. The shattering of the Luchos came after that. He's changing the... No, he's not changing the chronological order. He's saying that Truma and Tetzaveh are indeed before Kitisa, the sin of the eagle. For Olam Kulam Inyan HaMishkan, Kinyan Shenestatzel HaMakodesh Baruch Hu, V'natam Bo Aluchot HaShniyot L'Nkar, was appeased that he gave him the second luchot to korat and mo b'rit chadosha, and he made with him a new covenant. Sheyelach Hashem b'kirbam, that God will go in their midst. Hinei chozar l'kadmusam ula ahavat kelulot. That's the important sentence. The important sentence over here is that they had now returned to the original love. Anafat Kululotan. There was a rebirth of the original love between God and the Jewish people that began at Sinai. Nitratzulahem. Hinei chosar lekadmotam ula'avat kululotam ubiyadua shetiyesh chunatov betolcham ki'inyam shetzivov tchilo. And it's known that his divine presence was going to be in their midst, as he had commanded him at first. V'osu l'mikdosh v'shochamti v'tolcham v'lachem tzivo utam Moshe ato v'chol ma'ashem tzvavim yitkilo. He keeps saying it over and over again, that the command to make the Mishkan was given before they sinned with the Egel. It's only that it is communicated afterwards. What the Ramban wants to say is that the original command to make the Mishkan was of profound value in and of itself. It was not in order to be a source of healing or an atonement for the sin that they had committed. So basically what we really have is those who say the parashot are out of order. By the way, the Ramban here remains faithful to something he says throughout Torah. He is never ready to accept the idea of any motam u'mo'ochor ba'Torah, that Torah is out of chronological order. Unless you're forced to, unless our rabbi said it. But it's not the kind of idea that one can use randomly when they so decide. And he has a running debate with Rashi and the Ibn Ezra throughout Chumash. A number of places that Rashi and the Ibn Ezra say, this is out of order, it's out of order. One of the significant places where they disagree is in Parashat Korach, the Korach Rebellion. Did the Korach Rebellion come after the Miraglim or before? In Torah, it's Bamidbar, Noso, Ba'alotcha, Shlach, Miraglim, Korach, the Korach Rebellion. Ebenezer says, no, 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 no. The Korach rebellion took place much earlier. Korach rebellion took place earlier. It was not that. He brings all sorts of proofs that it had to be earlier. The Gemara says, no, no, no. It's not so. He says, before the miraculum, no one would have dared to challenge Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. Korach was only able to gather rebels around him because the Miraculous Rebellion meant that the great march to Eretz Yisrael is over. This generation is going to die in the desert. All of the great promises that were made are not going to be fulfilled with them. We're talking about a people who have now, who are now depressed. They have been condemned to dying in the desert. Then you can find people who are going to stand up against the leadership of Moshe. So the Rabban says, no, the order of the Torah is correct. Shlach and then Korach. So here we have the two opinions. Is the real order Kitiso, Truma Tetzavah Yaakov Pekudei, or is the order as it appears in Torah, Truma Tetzavah Kitiso Yaakov Pekudei, is that the correct order? I mentioned earlier in the share that there is a problem with the Midrashim and the Rashi, that we should be left with the impression that that whole side of Torah that deals with sacrifice in such great detail was only because of the sin of the Egel, leaving the impression as though there is no positive value in and of itself is extremely difficult to accept. There is a similar machlokes, a machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam says the following. It's a very difficult Rambam to understand, but he says it in the Mara Neguchim. He says that the sin of the golden calf made it clear that Jews are not ready to serve an invisible God. They need a deity that they can touch, that they can feel, that they can hold, that they can embrace. And it's this weakness of the Jewish people which made necessary the building of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was going to be the means by which Jews were going to be weaned from idolatry. Instead of doing all this sacrifice and this sprinkling of blood, doing it to some kind of an egel, it's now transferred into doing it before the God of heaven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ramban, the beginning of Sefer Yikra. Why is he upset? That's for another shiur. He asks a whole series of questions on the Ramban. You're kidding me. All the sacrifices are only in order to wean the Jewish people away from idolatry, leaving the impression that there is no inherent and significant value in that whole major area of Torah. It's a fifth of Torah. And there's a great deal that said, as far as I'm concerned, the most significant answer to that question, how do we deal with the machlokes, the Rambam and the Ramban, or how do we deal with the Rambam? The Rambam who says that all of the sacrifices are just in order to take a poor people who are so addicted to idolatry, so that the mitzvahs of Korban are the methadone. This is what's going to, going to begin to heal them from all of this, and doesn't have any significant meaning in and of itself. So Ramban can't accept that. So there's one great answer. The answer is greater than all of that. The Meshech Chochma, Rabbi Meir Simchat Feinstein. We haven't said a Meshech Chochma in a long time over here. The Ar Sameach. Turn over the other side. I don't have the Meshech Chochma there. But what he's based on is there. There were, remember, there was a Mishkan. The Mishkan was the temporary dwelling place. The temporary dwelling place that was built in the Midbar crossed over the Jordan with them. It was erected in a number of places. The final place that it was erected, it was in Nob, it was in Givon, it was in Gilgal. The final place that it was erected was in Shiloh. And that's why in Shiloh today there is a big model. The shul is modeled after the Mishkan. The Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed in the days of Eli HaKohen, the days of Eli, when Hophni and Pinchas were killed, the Plishtim captured the Oron HaKodesh and took it back to Aza with them. Also, of course, they suffered terribly as a result of it. But Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed. And there was really nothing then until the Beit HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim. During the period when there was no Mishkan, and even at certain periods of the Mishkan, what was permitted to Jews was what's called a bama. A bama is a high place. Now, look, there are two Mishnayos in the Sefer Megillah. We can do them very quickly. Number seven, bama, literally high place, is the common scriptural term for any altar other than the altar of the tabernacle or temple. Mishkan, the temporary, or Mikdash, Beit HaMikdash. During most of Israel's history, it was forbidden to offer sacrifices on a bama. However, the ban was not applicable during the short periods in which the Mishkan stood in the cities of Gilgal, Nob, and Givon. When it was in Shiloh, for a long time, 200 years, Shiloh, one could not bring a sacrifice on a bama. You know what a bama was? A bama was a backyard altar. I was able to put up an altar and bring a sacrifice there. Watch. There are two kinds of bama. There's a bama gedola, a major bama, also known as bama sibur, a communal bama, was the altar of the public, and communal offerings were sacrificed on it. The bama ketama, the minor bama, known as bama siyachi, the private bama, was the altar of an individual who chose a location, erected a bama, and brought his personal voluntary offerings. Wherever you were, you could bring a sacrifice. Now the Mishnah says, anything bama gedola le bama ketama, there is no difference between the offerings that may be brought on a major bama and those which may be brought on a minor bama during the era that bamot were permitted. El Pesachim, except the Pesach offerings which may be brought only on the major bama. Korban Pesach you can only bring on the major bama. The major bama was the one always where the Mishkan was. Ein bama gedola. This is the rule. Simply, any sacrifice that a person can voluntarily choose to give, a carbon toda, a carbon stone, any carbon that I am moved to bring on my own, I have no obligation. I can bring on my little backyard bama. But if it is an obligatory sacrifice, it can only be brought on the bama gedola. Bama gedola was usually where the Mishkan or Givon it was, even though there was no Mishkan there. All right. Next Mishnah. Ein bein Shiloh li Yerushalayim. There is no difference between the laws pertaining to the tabernacle at Shiloh and those pertaining to the Temple of Jerusalem, Elisha Beshilo, Oflin, Kochim, Talim, Umaisa Sheni, the Kolhar Oel, Ubi Yerushalayim, Lifnim, and Hachomot, the Kan, the Kan, Kochim, Kedoshim, the Chol, and the Fin, the Akloim. Yeah? Kedusha Shilo, Yesh Acharel, Heta, or Kedusha Yerushalayim, Ein Acharel, Heta. The mission says two things. The mission says, number one, In Shiloh, you were able to eat the sacrifices of minor sanctity from any place where you could see the Mishkan. If you could see the Mishkan, if you're in a league someplace and you can see the Mishkan, you can eat holy sacrifices there. In Yerushalayim, you could never eat any Kodesh outside the walls of Yerushalayim. Then there's another extremely important, very significant. Shiloh yesh acharehel heter. After Shiloh was destroyed, there was heter. You know what it means? You are again permitted to make your private, personal backyard bar and bring sacrifices. Anybody can do it in his backyard. Kedushas Yerushalayim ein acharehel heter. From the moment the Beit HaMikdash was erected in Yerushalayim, never, ever again throughout all of history would man, a Jew, ever be permitted to bring the sacrifice outside of Yerushalayim. That means even though the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, doesn't mean you can bring a private sacrifice. No. Shiloh was destroyed. You can bring private sacrifices again. It means there are two separate and distinct concepts. One is called Mishkan, and the other is called Mikdash. Mishkan is the temporary dwelling place. Mikdash is the permanent dwelling place in Yerushalayim. So this brilliant Rebbe Simcha Kaimitvin says the following. He says it in order to explain the Rambam, who seems to leave the impression that all the things that we do of a sacrificial nature are in order to wean us away from idolatry. So he says that Rambam means during all of those periods that you were able to bring sacrifices on a Bama or Mishkan, that was in order to bring Jews away from idolatry. The antidote, the refuah for idolatry. Mikdash, Beis HaMikdash, is something of a completely different nature. Their sacrifices take on a sense of great sanctity, of permanence. So I want to say now, the same thing is true with regard to the Machlekes, whether Mishkan was commanded after Egel or before Egel. According to the Meshech Chachma, yes, after they sinned with the Egel, they needed a refuah. So God gave them the Mishkan. Yes, it was the refuah. That generation needed it. That's okay. That's absolutely okay. But you should know when it's going to come to the point of Beis HaMikdash. There we are talking about sacrificial observance of a completely different order. It has built into it eternity. It is all of a positive nature. It has nothing to do with weaning us away from anything in the world. What he does so beautifully is, we have once learned chapter 51 in Tilum. We have here the last four psukim. Take a look at how a brilliant, brilliant mind reads these psukim. You do not desire sacrifice that I should give, although Tirza. You don't necessarily want the sacrifice that is completely consumed. Do you know what God, the real sacrifice that man makes for God? Zivche Elokim Ruach Nishbara, a broken spirit. Lev nishbar v'nidka, a broken heart that is humbled. Elokim lo tivzeh, God will never reject or despise that. It's not the sacrifice, it's the heart that makes all the difference. Ah, heitiva v'ritzoncha et zion, do good in your favor unto Zion. Tivne chomot Yerushalayim, build the walls of Yerushalayim. Oz tachbod zivchei tzedek, Then you will desire the sacrifices of righteousness, all of the kolil, the burnt offering and the whole offering. Then the bullocks will go up upon your altar. You know how the Meshech Chochma genius learns these psukim? There's a period of lo tachbol zavach. There's a period in which God doesn't want sacrifice. And the only thing that sacrifice can accomplish then is to wean Jews away from idolatry. But there's going to come a time when God is going to want zivchei tzedek, the sacrifices that are righteous, that are correct, that he wants. You know when that's going to be? When he builds Chomot Yerushalayim and the Bet HaMikdash is established there. Oz tachbol zivchei tzedek, ol avakol, oz yalu al mizbach ha'parim. What he accomplishes is the following. When the Rambam talked about how all the various forms of worship were in order to give Jews another way of serving rather than serving idolatry, that was only for a limited period in Jewish history. And that was the meaning of the Mishkan, of the Bamos. We're talking about a Sefer Vayikra, which is a Sefer of eternity, and the mitzvahs of Korban are eternal. You know what that's talking about? Zivkei Tzedek. You know where Zivkei Tzedek are? That's in Yerushalayim. Oz, Tachbot Zivkei Tzedek. Otherwise, until that point in history, Lo Tachbot Zevach Be'etein. You don't need it. It was only then for the weak and the ones who needed it in order that they should be able to do something which gives them a sense of closeness to God. But that's not the ultimate. Mishkan is temporary in every respect of the word. Mikdash is permanent in every respect of the word. Yeah.